This is Joe Ebisujima from myorganizedchaos.com, and you're listening to Raising Playful Tots.
Thank you for joining me for another episode of Raising Playful Tots. I'm glad that you can stop by today. My name is Melitza. Welcome to the Play Space. It's here that we focus on play that we want to see and experience in our homes. We cover play-related topics to inspire, teach, challenge, and lead us to have a great time with these kids. And also so that we can introduce a new play idea or two. If you're new to the show, welcome, and hi to the regular playmates. Plenty of room, so come join us as we play with Play-Doh and talk about diversity in honour of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, celebrated on the third Monday of January. Thanks to a great activity by bonbonbreak.com. Last show, we started off the year with four ways to get on track with simple parenting and play this year. So if you missed that one, pop on over to the blog where you can listen to that show and find the archive of all the shows at raisingplayfultots.com/shows. For this week's show, I am excited that Joe from Jojo EB Designs is back on the show with us. This time, we're talking about easy Montessori activities to do at home, her story of how Montessori came into her home, and how she gets her son to put things away after he's used them, and so many more things, including her book. Let's dive into this interview right now. Stay tuned. Today, I'm welcoming back to the show Joe Ebisujima, a Brit living in Japan. She loves creating for children and helping parents to organize themselves and their children so that they can spend more quality time together. She writes about her work at My Organized Chaos, and she can also be found at her personal blog, Jojo Ebi Designs, where she shares about her everyday life, Montessori, which we'll talk about today, crafting and raising a bilingual child in Japan. Welcome back to the show, Joe. It's great to have you back. So what attracted you to Montessori? Because that's what the show is going to be about today.
Well, when my son was a baby, a tiny baby, we watched a TV program in Japan. And it was about this really cool school where the kids were doing practical things. Like, they wanted to get a sheep, so they had to make the sheep pen themselves and research it and actually build it and using maths and everything. And I was talking to a friend about it afterwards and saying how cool this school was. And she was saying, oh, that sounds like a Montessori school. And to that point, I'd never heard of Montessori. So I went off and started researching it, got some books and fell in love with the idea and the philosophy. So that's where it all kind of started.
And so what made you think that this was something that, because I mean, it's nice to see something as exciting as that, but once you looked at the materials, what switched you on to saying, like, I definitely want to do this with my child?
A lot of it was very, like, the very practical side. So, like, with the mathematic materials, they learn, usually in school, they learn the abstract and the concrete as separate articles. But in Montessori, it's more mixed together. And I really liked the way that it was formed and set out. And knowing myself that I wasn't great at maths at school, that I would have learned so much better if I'd been taught in that method. And a lot of it just seemed like good old-fashioned common sense. You know, like setting things up so children can do things for themselves and allowing them to become independent. And then the other thing I liked was that she's very much into cycles. So if the child suddenly gets really interested in, say, writing, then that's encouraged and they'll do it as a cycle. And at the end of the cycle, they naturally, you know, taper off and they'll get interested in, say, maths. or then maybe art. And I really like that way of thinking, because that's the way that my brain works. You know, I'll get really interested in something for a while and then I'll taper off and pick something else up. So I think it's a really good way of learning.
That's good. You did say earlier about independence, and I noticed that you'd spoken about glass and ceramic plates, and that's what you preferred to use with your son from the beginning, not plastic plates or any of those types of things. Why is that important in Montessori?
Part of it is to respect, for the child to learn respect. So if a child throws a plastic cup on the floor, it just bounces, and the worst case scenario is they spilt some milk on the floor. But if they throw a ceramic cup, then it might break. Mm. And so maybe they'll do that once and it'll break and there'll be a big, you know, kerfuffle. But it's to teach the child respect of their belongings. And I've noticed with the kids that I know that have done Montessori, they are a lot more respectful of their belongings than other kids, because they take more care. They know that it's going to get damaged. And it goes the same for like books and toys as well, that once they start to learn respect for the things that they have, they treat everything a lot better. And it gets rid of that mindset that, you know, you can just throw things away. You know, you need to look after what you've got. So we chose to use ceramics and glass from the start. We did have a plastic cup for when we were out and about, because that was, you know, just a practicality. But at home, we always used... I used a little espresso cup, which was like tiny. It was perfect. And if anyone's doing it now IKEA make little ceramic cups, which are great, little plates and things. And, you know, if they'd made those back in the day when my son was little, I'd use those too. And in Japan, they often have lots of small dishes when it comes to meal times, so there's plenty of little dishes available. So I just used cheap little dishes, and we only ever had one breakage, and that was an accident. He, you know, knocked it off the table accidentally, and it broke, and he cried for ages. But that was the only one. And we were always sure to tell him that if something broke, that he wasn't to touch it. It was to just come and tell me that it's broken. And I think that happens in Montessori schools as well, that if a child does have an accident and breaks something, they're told not to touch it so that they don't cut themselves, and that, you know, to go and get a teacher. So I think a lot of people worry that, you know, I give my child a glass, they're going to, you know, cut the hand off or something. But
yes, yeah. I think you're right. I think lots of people do have that as a concern, that when you have these types of precious plates and glasses, that you're worried that the kids are going to use and abuse them. But what you showed was really clever, is that you showed what to do when there was a problem. The other day, there was a big crash in the kitchen because my boys were drying and putting the dishes away, and there was a big crash. And I've always taught them to stand still and freeze if anything drops. And I wasn't in the kitchen this time, and I just heard one of them just yell, "Freeze!" From where I was, and I'd like completely stood still after the crash. I was like, oh my goodness, and I was running, and they were all just standing still like, we don't know what we're going to do now. And it was everywhere, like you said, it just travels everywhere, but they were all just standing still because they could just see what to do. And it makes such a difference when they know what to do. And they were wondering how they were going to step out of it, and, you know, what they were going to do. But I think that's the key, is when as adults we help our children to know what to do when there's an accident, then they can still use the same things that we use, and they do treat them differently when they have them in their hands.
Yeah. And yeah, I've noticed my son will often, you know, will be out shopping or whatever, and he'll pick up nice bowls or a nice cup and admire it. And yes. I don't worry about him picking things up off the shelves in a shop, because I know he's going to be careful with them. But I know a lot of parents would be like, oh, I can put that down, walk away from the shelf. You know?
Yeah. And I think sometimes we can make people nervous about doing things as well, when we say, oh, be careful, you're going to drop it. can make a child feel actually really nervous, more so than they were a moment ago when they're actually holding it. But if we teach them how to hold it properly from the first, like you said, it can be
a lot better in the future for that.
And of course, you don't have to give them your best, you know, heirloom crockery to use. You can go and get a couple of cheap plates. And that's what we've used for years, was just, you know, really cheap plates. Pretty, but cheap.
Yes. Yeah. Charity shops can be your friend for that as well. Because they have some really pretty stuff as well, don't they? That kids are really attracted to, all the patterns and things like that that you can find there. I wanted to go on to look at some environmental changes that we would experience if we were in a Montessori home, because I know that there is a certain style of things that you do when you have a Montessori home. So what environmental changes have you implemented, would you say, during, you know, the last 5+ years of Montessorying?
Well, we moved from a tiny apartment to a house. We built a house when he was 2. So when we were building the house, we built it with kind of Montessori in mind as well. So one of the big things was when we had his bedroom done, I asked to have the light switch lowered. So it wasn't at adult height, it was at child height. And of course, the builders all thought I was insane. And they were like, well, he's going to grow up. I'm going, yeah, but he'll still be able to reach the switch when he's grown up, but he can't reach it now. So that was quite good. And I think you can get, like, extensions that you can add to your, you know, if your house is already built, so that the kids can reach. I'm sure I've seen something somewhere.
Yeah, that makes sense, so that you can get to the lights, yeah.
Or, you know, just having a little step near the light switch would help. So a lot of the stuff that we did was making sure that there was plenty of low shelving so that he can pick things out and put things away himself. In the apartment, we didn't have a lot of space, so we just had one little shelf in like the kitchen dining area with most of his things on, and another little shelf in the living room. But now we've got more space, so like all the books, all his books are on the lower shelf so he can reach them. What else did we do? Having steps in the bathrooms and the sink, you know, so he can reach to wash his hands and everything. Mm. It's a long time ago, I can't remember. So basically just setting it up so he could do as much as he could by himself.
Yes.
Having hooks and his wardrobe as well. That's kind of evolved over the years. But initially it was just baskets that he could pull out and put his own things away and take his own things out. He could reach all his clothes. So I put, say, the winter clothes, I put those higher up in the summer so he didn't need to be messing with those anyway. And he could reach all the clothes that he needed.
So it seems as if that you spent time looking at his height and being at his level to see what he would be able to do without you, and you tried to enable that process so that he had a chance to be able to do some of these things for himself.
Yes. So yeah, that was the main process, thought process in every area of the home, was to enable him to do it himself.
Mm-hmm. And so when you wanted him to do it by himself, was it because you wanted him to just kind of grow up earlier, or is it that you felt something else was going on there? I think I know what the answer is, but I just want to share that kind of process of independence a bit more.
Well, Montessori's idea is that she has a famous saying on the lines of "help me do it by myself." And I think a lot of children have tantrums because they get frustrated. And they're getting frustrated because they're not able to do it themselves. So I wanted to set it up so that he could have the chance to do it. So he could do it himself if he wanted to do it himself. And if he needed help, he could ask. So he kind of had the choice. I wasn't forcing independence on him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if he wanted to go and get his coat and put it on by himself, he was able to because the coat was at child height.
Yeah, so, no, that makes absolutely sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So just preparing the environment so that when they're ready, they can do it by themselves.
Yeah. And I think also it gives a chance to practice as well some of the more tricky skills of, like you said, putting on a coat. Mm-hmm. That's one of the really tricky things, like putting a jumper on, you know, getting everything in the right place, in the right system at the right time takes a little practice. And if the only time you're ever putting a coat on is if you're leaving to go out, then that's a time pressure that you have. There's just lots of pressure that's there. But if it's at a height that he can get to, then he can practice putting on a coat on and off when he wants to at his own pace.
Yeah, and kids tend to practice a skill when they're learning a skill. So he went through a stage where he'd pull all the books off the bookshelf and I'd be like, oh no. But then he'd be trying to put them back on. So I taught him how to put them on the right way, you know, with the spine facing out. And so he'd sit there and look at the spine and then put it back on the shelf and then they'd take them all off again and put them back on again. And it was just a learning process.
Mm.
So although there was books all over the floor, it wasn't that bad at the end of the day.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. I wanted to talk about snack time because we're going to come on to talk about your Montessori book. And in it, you were talking about the fact that your son prepares his own snack in the morning. You know, you get everything out and put it on on the shelf and then he takes over. And he does it in a specific order, but it also, of course, depends on what snack that he's having. And I've usually done, and I think many of us have usually set out a snack for our children, like, here you go, this is yours, and brought something over. But it just sounds great that he's able to make his own snack with your help. So what is that process like? What does it look like? Take us through the steps.
Well, going back to when he was younger, so he started when he was about 18 or 20 months, and we had a little shelf, so I put on the shelf a mat, and on the mat has like an embroidered shape for the plate and the fork and the knife. It was a little wooden knife that we used, and his cup. And so he'd take the mat over to the table and put that down, then he'd go back and get the cup and the plate and, oh no, the cup and the fork. And then he'd get his chopping board out and take that to the table and get the food. So, say a banana, and he'd get the banana and peel it and chop it up. And you can imagine what it's like when an 18-month-old chops a banana up. And then he'd put it on a plate and then take his plate over. And I forgot the washing hands at the beginning. But, yeah, so basically I'd put the items out and then he'd prepare it all himself. Obviously I'd be watching over, but again, it's that independence thing. He was so proud of himself to be able to like make his own meal, as he would think of it. And we'd do it with a banana or a mikan satsuma,
And
anything that was kind of easy to peel. Or if it was something a bit more difficult to peel, so say a kiwi, I'd peel it first and then he would chop it up. Or other snacks like peanut butter on crackers or something like that. Still very easy things that would take us, you know, a couple of minutes to do, whereas it would become a half an hour activity for him. And within that activity, he was learning how to spread, he was learning how to clean up, he'd wash his dish afterwards or whatever. So instead of the snack being just a snack, it's a whole activity. And there's a lot of learning within the whole process. So what I would do is put the items out on the snack shelf maybe half an hour before his usual sort of snack time to stop him just going and eating it at any time.
Yeah.
But as he got older, then, you know, I could leave it out longer. I'd put it out first thing in the morning or whatever, and he'd go and get it when he was hungry. So that sort of changed as he got older. And now he basically just goes and helps himself out the fridge. So he'll ask whether it's okay to have a snack. If it's too close to dinner time, I'll say no. But, you know, most of the time he's fairly sensible with it all.
that's a really, I like that whole process of getting a snack and walking through it as a whole activity. It just takes a little time from the parent point of view to slow down enough to show what to do and how to do it. And over time that they manage to master that skill for themselves.
Yeah, so the first couple of times, you know, I'd have to show them how to spread the jam on the bread or whatever. But, you know, once he'd done it a few times, he was fully capable of doing it himself. So by the time he was three, he could prepare a handful of snacks all by himself. You know, I'd just put the stuff out. And showing how to clean up as well is important.
Yes, I liked that. You'd mentioned that in your book about the whole process of toys and activities, is that you show exactly from the beginning how where it was originally from, how you play with it, how you use it, and then how you put it all back, and then the children get to do that. Could you talk a little bit about that process?
Yeah, so that is a whole, in Montessori they call it a work cycle. So taking the things from the shelf, doing the activity, and then putting them back, and the cycle's not finished until it's back on the shelf. So that's quite important with getting kids to put things away, because you know what it's like, that, you know, they get yes. everything off the shelves and you walk in, it looks like a bomb's hit the place.
Yes.
But if you can get them into that habit early on, it really helps. And the same with when, like, dinner time or snack time, putting the plates in the dishwasher or the sink or washing up or whatever it is that you do in your home, that is an important part of the cycle as well. You know, your meal is not finished until your dishes are washed, as far as yes. I'm concerned. So
yeah.
And so, well, it goes with everything, you know, that when you get undressed at the end of the day, you're not finished until your dirty laundry is in the laundry basket. So
right.
you can apply the same idea to every aspect of your living at home. So Montessori isn't something that's just for the classroom, and it isn't just play or just educational. It's kind of like a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. to me, that's very important, that he learns how to do that sort of thing from an early age.
Yes, because it's what you do at this early age that goes on to be your foundation for the rest of your life, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You're teaching some really good skills. And I think that as you get older, if those skills haven't been taught, then you have to reteach them. And we all know that, you know, 9-10-year-olds are a lot harder to do, because you've got to change what they've been doing for the last 4 or 5 years. Whereas if you could have shown from the beginning, then they'd have grown in a way that respects the way that life really is, if you get what I mean.
And then things don't become chores, because
yes.
I hate the word chore. I don't want to do chores. It sounds horrible. So they don't become chores, because they are already part of the way of life.
Yeah.
So, yeah. you know, I like that aspect as well, that being taught from such an early age is that you're not going to have those battles later on.
Yeah.
No, that's really clever. So what activities did your son love to revisit? Because you've mentioned lots of activities within your book.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that there'll be specific activities that you remember doing that he loved to go back to over and over again.
That's quite a few. And like with the cycles, so they'll... He'll be really interested in something and then he won't touch it for months and then he'll go back to it. So it's quite interesting to watch the change over the time. He really liked the one with the golf tees and the marbles.
Yeah.
So that helps the pincer muscles, which need strengthening for writing. So that's really good to do before they start even, you know, going to school or whatever. And he started off doing that with his fingers and then progressed to using like a pincer to pick the marbles up, which is quite difficult. Which other activities did he like? Anything artsy and craftsy he loved. Oh, he's sitting next to me here doing actions. He's making a volcano. So we did the volcano the first time when he was about two, and I think we've done it at least once a year since then. So, yeah, that's a big one. And kids love that activity.
Oh, yeah, it's fun because it's the anticipation, I bet.
Yeah. I still like it for that.
And, of course, as they get bigger, they want to put more baking powder and more vinegar in to make a bigger explosion.
I bet. So on a typical day, what might we see if we were a fly on your wall in your home for part of the day? And I'll let you choose which part of the day that would be. What might we see if we were in your home? Would we see independent play? Would we see you working with your son? What would we see?
Well, he's at regular Japanese school now, so we don't have as much time as we used to. So say after school, he comes in and gets down. Yeah, he has a snack as soon as he gets in. He sorts that out himself. Then he'll get his homework done because he gets a ton of homework every day. And then often we'll do some kind of activity or, like some crafting activity, something in English. So maybe reading a book or researching something on the internet. And we'll do that together initially, and then I'll go off and do dinner and he'll finish up by himself and clean up, tidy up. And sometimes he'll come and help in the kitchen as well. He likes mm-hmm. to chop things up and cook as well. So he pretty much does everything by himself these days. He's fairly independent. He'll go and sort himself out with the bath and everything, so... As I say, we don't have as much time as we used to, so...
Okay, fair enough. So what led you to write your book about Montessori activities? Could you give us the title and tell us what led you to write it?
Okay, so it's Montessori Inspired Activities for Preschoolers. And from when Epicom was 20 months, I think, I started blogging. And back then, there were very few Montessori blogs around, and the ones that were around were like professional Montessori teachers blogging more about what was going on in the classroom. There were only a handful that were talking about Montessori at home, and so I was just basically blogging about what we were doing and got quite a following from that. And I noticed a lot of people were worried about starting Montessori because they hadn't got the specialised equipment, or, you know, they couldn't set their home up like a proper Montessori classroom, which is one of the things that I worried about when I started, because we just didn't have space to do that. So I wanted to make this book specifically using items that you don't need any specialised equipment. You've probably got everything at home anyway, and that you can just... You follow the instructions, you don't need Montessori training. If you follow the steps in the book, you'll be doing it right anyway. And to show that anyone can do it, really. There is some key equipment that really, if you're going to get really into Montessori, that perhaps you should invest in. But I really wanted the book to focus on the fact that you can do a lot of the Montessori activities without any specialised equipment.
Okay.
So that was the aim of it. So I picked out there's 52 activities from when he was younger, but a lot of them, the activities he's done several times, you know, he's still doing them today.
That's really practical. When I was looking through the book myself and seeing all the different ideas that you can do, it really made you see how easy it is to use the current things that you have at home, and that you don't need specialist equipment to be able to do that. So I'm really glad that there is a book like that that's available, that you can just kind of get straight to trying activities in a new play style, because I'm thinking of parents that are thinking about trying Montessori, maybe sending their child to a Montessori classroom themselves, but want to try some things at home, or even just parents that want to do Montessorying at home, just like you have, that they want to kind of get their hands dirty and try things out straight away, your book would be a really good starting point for that. So could you tell us, if I was a parent now and I wanted to do something Montessori related with my child, could you tell us what a few ideas that we could try?
Well, a lot of it depends on the child and, you know, where they're at the moment. I think one of the important things is watching your child and understanding what their interests are at the time, so that you can provide them with the things that they need at that time. So if they're really into their letters, if they've started recognising letters, make sure that they've got lots of things around that will encourage more. You know, don't just give them some plastic magnetic letter shapes and leave it at that. Try and come up with more games and more ideas that you could be using to encourage that. And the same with like counting or colours. The when you find that they're in one of those interest zones, build on it, you know, throw everything at them so that they can learn more and more. Because the more practice they have and the more different ways of interacting with whatever the core subject is, the more they're going to learn. So, much of it depends on the stage of the child or what your child is into at the time. A lot of it, you're like practicing letters or numbers, just tipping some sand into a tray, like a baking tray, and have them making the shapes. Things like that is really easy. Or you can do the same with shaving foam. Put the shaving foam into a tray and then get them to make the letters or the numbers in the shaving foam.
They're really clear and simple ways to be able to get going right now, because we'll have those ingredients probably in our homes already that we can try. So that's really good. Now, you've given lots of really practical ideas about how to start doing Montessori in the home, and you shared your journey of what you used to do and still do, because it's a lifestyle and a whole way of doing things. And I really appreciate you coming on today, Jo, to talk about your book. Where can we find that book?
It's on Amazon at the moment, so you can get it on Kindle or a paperback. And if you're not in, I think the printed version is only available in America and Europe. So if you're not in America or Europe, you can go to the book depository and it's on there too. So you can, and that's free international shipping. So it's worth checking out the book depository.
Okay, excellent. Today I've been talking to Jo Ebisujima. She writes about her work at My Organized Chaos, and she can also be found at her personal blog, Jojo Ebby Designs, where she shares about her everyday life, Montessori, crafting, and raising a bilingual child in Japan. Thanks for being on the show today, Jo.
Thank you for having me.
I'll be right back after this short break.
This is Dr. Lawrence Cohen, author of The Art of Roughhousing, and you're listening to Raising Playful Tots.
I always have fun talking to Jo. I'm learning the power of the to-do list, and Jo is so positive and encouraging when I share my organizing woes. So the question is, will you be trying some of these Montessori-inspired activities? I'll leave a link in the show notes for you to find out more about Jo, her ebook, and the things that she does. Kathy from blissbeyondnaptime.com has a contest going on for a seat on a course from the fabulous Helena Sorensen. That if you're quick and you're listening right now when this show comes out, then you'll still have time to enter. And I think that you'll love it. Okay, here's a little bit of it, the e-course. It's a six-week e-course that helps you create peaceful and joyful days together. Doesn't that sound great? Although 2 to 4-year-old children can be cute and lots of fun to have around, it can also be an extremely challenging time for us as parents. In creating magical days, we work towards smoother days and learn how to bring magic and joy to our days through storytelling,
cooking and baking together, spending lots of outdoor time and finding activities which every one of us enjoys, not only the kids. How neat is that? Just last week, we were talking about simple ways to get on track with simple parenting and play. This would be a great start. I love finding gems like this. It begins on February the 3rd, so if you don't get to win a place on the course, I'll leave a link to this contest hosted on Kathy's Bliss Beyond Naptime blog, and you can check out Helena's site, The Cherry Tree Farm, all in the show notes. Oh, I've got some news. I'm excited to be a contributor to a Take Action ebook for my friend Shannon from afreespiritlife.com. You get it for free when you join her e-course, Inside Out. I'm really excited about being on this course this time round. Do you have 5 minutes? If you have a moment, I'd love you to fill in the Raising Playful Tots survey. I know how sometimes when you're listening to a podcast, you think of a guest or a thought gets triggered about a book that you've read recently or a passage that you remember from some time ago. Well, me too. It's exactly the same. You listen to a show and it fills you so completely that you wish you were, there were more shows like this. I was listening to Inspired to Action this week with Tish talking about her upcoming book and felt exactly that same way. I'd left an iTunes review and Kat mentioned me as well on the show, and that was really cool. Thanks, Kat. Parental Geekery and the show about whether Santa gives the good presents or is it that Mummy and Daddy give the good presents. I laughed so hard driving to Sheffield that morning. John and Ruth are great keeping it real in parenting. Love them. We all love feedback. What comes in from you via iTunes reviews, Twitter and Facebook messages and emails really helps us as podcasters to bring on, share what will be great for you in 2014. I have a few programs I'll be starting this year to support you all. And as always, we'll be developing more free resources like these podcasts and challenges. We have the Creating the Family Haven starting in March. And I would love it if you have 5 minutes to be able to fill out this survey, and you can find it at raisingplayfultots.com/simple survey, or one word, that's simple survey. Thanks. Thank you for being here today and listening to the show. It really means a lot to know that you've chosen to keep feeding on simple play and simple parenting. If you've enjoyed this show or any of your favourite podcasters recently, nip on over to iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen, rate and review their show. Talk directly to them. For all the links about our interview here with Jo about the Montessori-inspired activities and her book, pop on over to raisingplayfultots.com/156, and they're all numbers, the number 156, and that will take you straight to the show notes where you'll find all the links. You don't have to worry if you're on the machine doing a workout, if you're driving in your car on the way to work, you'll still be able to come over and find all the links to what we've been talking about. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 156. Come over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, learn, and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime. Goodbye. Today I'm welcoming back to the show Jo Ebisujima. Am I saying your name right? Ebisujima. No, the
Ebisujima.
You see, I remembered that I didn't say it right, but Ebisujima.
Yes.
No. Ebisujima. Ebisujima. I practiced all day as well. Ebisujima. Today I'm welcoming back to the show Jo Ebisujima. Oh. Why can't I do it today? It's 10:30 talking.
Oh. Yeah, there's no emphasis on the G bit. Ebisujima.
Ebisujima.
Yeah.
Jo Ebisujima.
Yeah, well. whatever.
I'm sorry.
Japanese people can't get it right, so don't worry about it.